Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The state of our state is still in question in terms of what's going to happen with the budget, what could be cut or not cut. Did the issue of gambling really take hold of this session and stop the budget from taking place? What's going on, do we think, with the negotiations between Miller, Bush, and O'Malley? Two of the men covering that are joining us here in this segment of our program. At 410-319-8888, Charles Robinson, once again, Republican for the Maryland Public Television, and a regional director of the National Association of Black Journalists.
Former, not current, just the former regional director.
All right, former. Maybe I should just take it out altogether then. No, I'm just kidding. Former, I'm just kidding. Welcome back, Charles. Good to have you with us.
Always great to be with you, Mark.
John Wagner's with us. A Washington Post reporter has covered Maryland government and politics for the Post since 2004. John, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And John, without blowing smoke, I'm going to tell you, you've done some of the best reporting out of Annapolis I've seen. It's really very thorough and lots of good work.
Well, thank you, and let's move on.
It's always shocking that you have to go to Washington to read the news about what's going on in Annapolis. But anyway, 410-319-8888 is the number here. In all seriousness, I'm curious what we think is going on. I mean, let me get both your perspectives here, John Wagner first and Charles Robinson, about the role that gambling played. I asked the elected officials when they were on here if they thought that the gambling interest held the budget hostage was a question I asked that some delegates and senators were on here several weeks ago right after the session ended. And one of the delegates said they were all there, they and their lobbyists and owners, at the end of the session and didn't leave until it was over. Whether that means anything or not is another question. But, John Wagner, what do you think about that and what role that played in this whole process?
Well, I don't know the fact that the lobbyists were here till the bitter end, and it was a bitter end in many people's view. But that alone indicated, you know, whether the budget was being held hostage. I think you had a much more complicated and volatile mix of priorities and personalities among the two presiding officers. And there, it's certainly true that there was consideration of a gambling bill that would have called for a statewide referendum on a Prince George's casino and allowed table games at the other five locations. That was in the mix very much until the end. You know, whether or not it held up the budget is a matter of dispute at this point. So it's certainly undeniable that was on the table, so to speak, right up until midnight.
Charles, how did you see it?
Well, you know, as John has indicated, you know, there were a lot of things in play and in motion. But the biggest thing was the budget, because that's the only thing the legislature had to do, is legally obligated to do. But the problem was is that early on, the Speaker of the House made the claim that the President of the Senate was holding up everything. And as far as I could tell, you know, they went into the last day knowing that this was going to be on the table. They knew that the budget was on the table. And I was just, I guess I was really perplexed. Why did we wait till the 11th hour to begin this kind of negotiations? You would think that somebody with some cooler heads would have prevailed and said, look, we need to settle this a week out so we're not here at the 11th hour trying to solve one of the state's biggest issues, how to solve, you know, a shortfall. Because that's what we ended up with, was trying to figure out how do we solve this. And we ended up with this so-called doomsday plan that, you know, some people said, you know, let it happen. And that would be a majority of the folks on the Republican side. And then there are some people who said, you know what, let's see it play itself out.
So I wonder, going back to what you alluded to earlier, John Wagner, what you've written about. So what do you think was then beneath, as you wrote in the Post, the drama and politics of this brinksmanship, in Annapolis? What was there? What was that dynamic that was going on?
Well, it's certainly clear that the Senate President, Mike Miller, wanted to see a gambling bill get through, and it was less of a priority on the House side. Again, a lot of this depends on who you talk to. Miller will tell you that he thought he had a deal, that Bush had bought into the notion of passing the gambling bill along with a couple of different bills that were needed to put the budget fully in place, and that Bush, in effect, went back on that deal. Bush will tell you that he said he would try in good faith to get a gambling bill across the finish line, but never promised that he would. The two men also differ on kind of what happened in the closing hours of the session. We know that there was a meeting between the two of them within about an hour, hour and a half before the clock struck midnight on April 9th. Bush said that Miller made explicit at that point that he wasn't going to pass a revenue bill that was needed to avoid the doomsday budget unless Bush first passed the gambling bill. Miller says that's not true. He might have heard it that way, but that's not what I said.
I'm sorry. I didn't know you ended. Charles?
No.
Well, you know, this is that, you know, one-upsmanship, if you will. I thought, and John and I were there the following day, which was even more stark when you went into the signing room where, you know, it's supposed to be this joyous occasion where bills that were passed, people come up, get the picture taken with the governor and the presiding officers. But I noticed the distance between the two presiding officers before the governor came in. And they wouldn't look at each other. It had gotten to that point where, you know, the animosity was, I don't know if I like you. I know I got to sit here. And I thought then the recriminations in the kind of spin that each one had at the signing ceremony, I mean, you could cut the tension with a knife. I don't know about you, John. I sat there going, are they really saying this about each other? Because I couldn't believe that that's what they were doing.
Yeah, they've never had a particularly chummy relationship. And, you know, O'Malley, through the 5-6 years that he's been governor, has managed to hold things together, I think, reasonably well. Part of the dynamic that I don't know has been talked about quite as much is that, you know, they did start with O'Malley's budget, but both the House and Senate altered some parts of it fairly fundamentally. And with the gaming bill, O'Malley was never that much of a player. He took kind of a hands-off approach and had plenty of other agenda items he was trying to get through. So in the closing hours of session, you had two major items, the budget and the gambling bill, that the governor was not as fully invested in as he might have been had, you know, either been his. I think in fairness to his office, they certainly tried to play a role in bringing this to a peaceful conclusion, but it turned out looking kind of like a game of chicken gone awry.
But it's clear that two of Martin O'Malley's biggest constituencies in the state of Maryland, through the work of Ruchon Baker, who's county executive of Prince George's County, and Mayor Stephen Rawlings Blake, Mayor of Baltimore City, want this gambling bill passed, as do the unions.
That's true, though. You know, the legislative delegations from Prince George's and Baltimore were not fully aboard, certainly when the final day started. There was a lot of wheeling and dealing to try and get members of both to come around. But it was an instance where neither Baker nor Rawlings Blake was speaking for, you know, their legislators in its entirety.
And I think the other thing that was very clear, John is right. There started being last-minute backroom deals that seemed to even doom the process. You know, the Baltimore City delegation, at the last minute, when they knew the gambling bill was going to possibly go through, they started asking for stuff like, we need to get $100 million for school construction if they want this deal done. The Baltimore County delegation was like, they said, well, what can we get out of this? This was like, it was a free fall as we got towards the end. But I think the thing that most people in the state are wondering is, when are we going to have a special session? And what is it going to take to get us to a special session? And I don't know if that's clear at this point, considering what I've heard from John reported about Rushmore and Baker trying to revise his budget, assuming that he won't get any money. Stephanie Rawlings Blake is looking at new plans to increase the bottle tax to bring in more revenue. And, you know, this becomes this, do you want it to get as bad as it gets before you cut a deal? And I think that's where they really are at this point.
Well, it seems to me in some ways that they are at a point, which means we're at a point, where they know that we need more revenues to do what they have to do, or they have to deliver a doomsday budget and cut and find out where they're going to cut. and they don't want to deal with taxes. They don't. I remember Martin O'Malley said on this program at the Annapolis Summit, everybody took a gasp when he said, look, I don't want gambling. I don't want this stuff. What I really want to do is raise taxes. I want to raise the sales tax, maybe expand the sales tax. I mean, that was, but no, but of course that didn't go anywhere. But the issue of how you get revenues dealing with that in a very serious, hard way, and biting the bullet are things that will not happen in the special session, and doesn't seem like it happened during the 90 days.
Well, one dynamic that's in place is, you know, the doomsday budget, as it's called, is in fact a budget that it's a little bit out of whack, but not so much so that it requires the legislature to come back. There's not any threat of a government shutdown or anything like that if they don't come back. So it gets to be a little harder, and the speaker has made this point to, you know, have his delegates come back with the spotlight on them as they just raise taxes. And that's, you know, if you don't include gaming, that's pretty much all they'll be here to do. And I think some of the Democrats who are returning to, you know, somewhat more conservative districts are hearing, you know, congratulations from their constituents for not raising taxes as much as they could have while they were here, which makes it a slightly more complicated calculation to come back, even if you're doing it for programs most people would say are worthy.
Right.
And Mark, one of the interesting dynamics that's going on is, you know, you never sign every bill at that signing ceremony. So there's some bills that are still hanging out there. And already the budget secretary, Eloise Foster, has said, Governor, you might want to hold off on signing anything that doesn't bring revenue in or adds to the deficit. So that even complicates things even more because, you know, there were some things that everybody was happy about. So the question is, do those things get signed by the governor and go into law? And remind yourself, we have several dates that are in play. Of course, the end of the fiscal year, June 30th, is when everything basically rolls over to the next year. So, but you don't want to get to that point. So you're talking about at least, you went 30 days out, at least, before that, when you have to really do something. And then the other part of that is this whole idea, if you're going to put gambling on the table, if you will, both figuratively and, you know, and all that goes into it, you got to write language for a statewide referendum. Let me just tell you, every time you write this legislation, it gets kicked back because someone says, well, you shouldn't have said shall or you will. And so you got to give time for that to happen. So we're talking like middle of May when you got to get some stuff done.
Do you see this as being a long, drawn-out session then, John Wagner?
Well, there are a couple scenarios. Ideally, you know, I think all three leaders, O'Malley, Bush, and Miller, would like to craft some deal that they can deliver on before they come into session, and that will facilitate something that's no more than a couple days. If that doesn't happen, you know, the governor does have the option, and it's a real gamble, of calling them back without agreement. It's kind of what he did in 2007 during his first year when there was a special session on revenues, and you take the risk that, you know, having the spotlight shine brightly on them will cause them to act. And whether it would in this case or not, I don't know. We may get a slightly better feel for that tomorrow morning. The three of them are having breakfast at the governor's mansion, and presumably will give us some indication of whether progress was made.
Folks, you can join us here, by the way, at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Check on our Facebook page, either Mark Steiner or the Mark Steiner Show page, 410-319-8888. What do you expect your representatives to do? What are you expecting out of this special session? Do you think about, I don't think your sales tax will be raised or broadened, but do you think that should happen? Do you think we should have gambling in the state of Maryland? Do you think we should live with the doomsday budget and have no more taxes? And live with the cuts and figure out where those cuts should be. What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Maybe you just don't care. Maybe that's why they don't either. 410-319-8888. So what do you think? Give me some sense of what you think. You've been there for a long time, both of you, watching this go on. And they are going to have breakfast tomorrow morning. And what do you think is going to come out of it? I mean, Charles and then John, what's your prognostication about what you think we may end up with?
Well, first of all, they got to agree on a date. In other words, if they're going to have a special session, they got to say, "All right, this is the date we want to have it." Then the other question after that, I think, is you got to answer, well, how are we going to bring these revenues? And what are we going to tell people why they're coming back? They've got to already calculate that they're not going to get any Republican votes on this budget in either House.
Right.
And, you know, that carves out the niche of what you want. The question is, how bad do the citizens of the state feel the pain? So I think the governor will try what he tried the last week of the session. Well, the week before when he said, hey, how about a 7% across-the-board sales tax? Nobody likes that. I mean, that's as dead as when he offered up the gas tax. You know, I did two stories on the gas tax, and I couldn't find anybody who said, yeah, go ahead, build it. I think I heard two people, it was Rusher and Baker and Stephanie Rawlings. Baker said, yes, let's do that. But when you talk to the regular citizenry, they're like, you got to be out of your mind. The next part, I think, of their discussion has to be, how do we all save face in this? Because right now, I think the legislature looks really, really bad. I won't use the word incompetent, but, you know, you got 90 days to do a budget. You know, figure that out. But at the end of that, everybody's going to want to save face, and you got to figure out a way to save face.
John Wagner?
Well, and I think just in terms of what happens tomorrow, it's interesting. There are a couple. Well, I guess what's interesting is that if you talk to aides of any of the big three we're talking about, they don't really know how it's going to go until the three of them get in a room. There hasn't been a whole lot of pre-conferencing, if you will, and there seems to be just as much betting that this could go relatively smoothly as it could just be a disaster. That you know, they may spend as much time yelling at each other as they do moving forward. I do think, you know, in the end, the betting is still that there will be some meeting of the minds, and that there will be a special session, and life will go on much as we know it. but I mean, there are some real hurdles to overcome, and you know, in some respects, they weren't that far from being done when they. You know, when the clock struck midnight on April 9th. And so, you know, kind of the cooler heads prevail theory is that there's a way to put that back together and get out of here in relatively short order with something that looks a lot like what they had. But, you know, the big question becomes whether that includes the gaming bill or not.
410-319-8888. Let's hear what you think about this and what you think about the gaming bill. Do you want to see it on the table? 410-319-8888. And D, you're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Clearly, I think that the governor, the Speaker of the House, and the Senate President are being very disingenuous toward the citizens in the state of Maryland. Number one movie, I believe, last week in America was The Three Stooges. We're clearly looking at theater down there taking place in Annapolis. It's almost like an episode of watching Monday Night Raw from the WWF. But nothing happens down there that the governor and the Senate President and the Speaker of the House doesn't want to happen. If this was a real issue, we would see mass protests, as we saw in Wisconsin under Governor Walker. But yet we don't see police and fire unions and teachers unions occupying Annapolis right now. So we clearly know that there's some deals that's been cut. And at the end of the day, I disagree with Mr. Wagner. Life won't go back to normal for the citizens in the state of Maryland. We'll be taxed higher than probably any other state in the country right now. And the governor has to take the blame because, as the Sun editorial said, or cartoon, Cal said, the three of them. One has been playing bridge, one has been playing poker, the other one has been playing solitaire while the citizens in the Maryland are suffering. So clearly this was just high theater that's taking place in Annapolis to deceive the citizens in Maryland that there's some type of fight going on. And really there's no fight going on. They're just looking at what they can get that's in the best interest of, again, the governor, in the best entrance of the syndicates that we will open the state up to once we bring in casinos, not just in Prince George's County, but in the rest of the state of Maryland. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Dee said a lot. I mean, they asked you both a broad question. He said first, and I found it very interesting. Is this why this is not like Madison? How is it different than what happened in Wisconsin? I think it's one of the things he's asked. And you, John, you want to jump into that?
Well, a couple things. I think One is that the impact is a little harder to sort through and not quite as immediate. The counties and are starting to look at what this means. There's potentially a increase in college tuition that could come out of this, but that hasn't really trickled down and become real yet. So I think there is some chance as the next couple of weeks go by that you will see some affected groups organizing a little more than they have. That said, this is not a really cut and dried situation. There is a budget in place, as we've said, and they don't have to come back for the government to stay open. There are some counties that, if you look at the numbers, don't really fare that much worse than they would otherwise. One thing we haven't talked about is, there is a proposed shift in
pensions.
The teacher pension cost that is one of the casualties of this process, depending on your view, I suppose. But it's one of the things that didn't go through in any event. So, that's a plus for counties on that side of the ledger. And I think a lot of them are kind of still wading through what happened and trying to figure out how much worse they really are off.
I mean, the shift in pensions could still happen in this special session, correct?
It could, but my point is, if they don't come back, some counties will be not as bad off as it might appear, because
that's
on the other side of the ledger. So, that's part of the reason why I think you haven't seen as much of an outcry as some might expect.
Mark,
Charles.
Mark, one of the things that I think the governor is looking at. He has aspirations for higher office, and I think most of us who've been observers of him believe that in 2016, Martin O'Malley will be one of about five candidates from across the country on the Democratic side who will make a run at president of the United States.
Right.
Whoever wins in this current election, it'll be open for Democrats in that next election. Recently, the governor did a press briefing with national press and, excluded all local press from it, which was strange because, he usually talks to everybody. But I thought that this whole debacle kind of squashes the image he had of strong leader from Maryland. He can't wear that title if he doesn't figure this out. He's gotten several national awards for being chief executive of the year by several magazines. And, he's made no bones about, I think this is the way that Democrats should govern if they follow my pattern. And, and I think that also is playing into this process. Here's a guy who believes that, hey, I could be on top of the world if I solve this problem. And the other part could be I could not be considered a special candidate, so that's a problem.
So, in looking at what that is, I was really interested in also the whole question of the teachers' pensions, because that's something we covered pretty heavily in this session, and had some town meetings about that, meetings in Annapolis about that we broadcast from, and this whole burden back on the counties is a big piece of this. Of what's going on. I never thought about it, you said, John Wagner, which is one of the reasons that maybe this is why many counties and delegations are being so quiet right now, that there isn't the uproar. And the unions can then focus on gambling and not on the pension issue.
Well, the unions do have another real potential hit coming, which is there are 500 jobs that will have to be cut as a result of the doomsday budget. And so obviously at least some of those unions their members would be directly affected by that. So there is kind of a fairly complicated calculus a lot of interested groups are having to go through as to, what the ultimate damage is to them. And I think, just letting the wheels turn to do that calculus is part of what the delayed response has been.
So this we have till the end of June to get this done, but my sense is that they're going to try to push and get this done sooner than later, that O'Malley's got some political capital on bringing everybody together to try to resolve this one way or the other. And as we began with this, since there may be no new revenues coming out of this, that I don't see how they can finish the session without putting the referendum on the table. it's going back to where we started, but I'm just curious, like, to end and see what you, if you agree with that, Charles.
The referendum is look, gambling is in the state of Maryland. The problem that a lot of people have with this whole idea of this Prince George's facility is that you're cutting a pie three ways as opposed to, well, actually it's more than three ways, it's
maybe
like
five,
six ways,
right?
Five. But you know, Prince George's had an opportunity to get in on the gambling situation. They opted not to. And of course, if you look at what's going on at Maryland Live, which is the newest casino that will come online in June, you can imagine why Cordish is so upset. He's going, wait a minute, I've had four, how many lawsuits has he had? Three or four? I can't remember, but it's, you know, he's had to pay for each one of those lawsuits. He's had to fight a referendum, and now you're going to tell him that he can't have a windfall? I can see why people are upset. You know what I mean? I mean, because remember how much money you had to put up for these things? It was $100 million. Not everybody did it. And so, and you know, because remember when Laurel didn't put up the money, they said, well, we don't know if we'll get our money back. Well, that's the bet you had to make. You know, it's like poker. You got to put your money in the pot to be in the game. And I think a lot of people are questioning why this late entry. And then, of course, you know, we had the CEO from Caesars. And, you know, there were questions from the Baltimore delegation. Would they see that as a better opportunity in Baltimore City? Because remember, we still haven't done the Baltimore City casino deal yet. We're still at that. Let's make sure that works. And so this is complicating everything that the state wants to do. Don't get me wrong. I understand what they mean about National Harbor. Been down here, done a bunch of stories about that place. It's going to make a lot of money if they put one there. But remember also, they wanted to change the percentages also
right.
in that deal.
So before the hour runs out, John Wagner, your take on that.
Well, I guess first point to your earlier question is I don't think they would come back unless there is an agreed upon revenue or revenue package. In other words, I don't think they would come back just to handle gambling.
Right.
And we could, I'm sure you could do and probably have done several shows just devoted to the gambling package. But it's a very complicated mix because you have, you know, different regions with different interests. And, you know, just to counter one thing Charles said, there would not. There was a process put in place back in 2007, 2008 for how you go about expanding the number of sites. So while Cordish may rightfully or not argue that this isn't fair to him, that there was a the possibility was known that there could be another player at the time that this thing was conceived. But you can clearly understand why everyone wants to be protecting their turf in this environment. The other aspect of this that's kind of gotten lost is, in addition to the Prince George's site, this bill attempted to add table games at
right.
all of the sites, which is something you have in the surrounding states that do have gambling, and has made it more difficult for Maryland as it gets its gaming program up and running to compete with surrounding states. So I think if Prince George's were not part of the mix, there would be a table games bill that would sail right through. But that's not the reality that they find themselves in.
John Wagner, Washington Post reporter, who's covered Maryland since Maryland politics since 2004, and Charles Robinson, reporter for the Maryland Public Television. Thank you both so much. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you, Mark.
Folks, I want to thank you all for listening in and joining in today. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cricket Aronson and Justin Levy. Our assistant producer is Cassandra Monsanto. Our intern today is Alexis Seth. We are engineered by Regis Tucker. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And stay tuned now. Marsha Jews is coming up with Keep It Moving. Sonia Sanchez will be with her. That'll be interesting. And we'll be coming to Baltimore and more. So stay with us for that. for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.